This morning's reading is from the Gospel as told by Mark, chapter 10, beginning at verse 35. It's the request of James and John. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." "You don't know what you are asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with, but to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the ten heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." This is the word of the Lord.
Morning, saints. In case you thought it looked a bit thin this morning with the youth going out, 17 of them are in Gloucestershire at the moment with Sophie, our youth pastor, doing abseiling, and we thought it might help them learn to pray. So you can pray for Sophie as well. I've been sent a few videos. It looks like they're having fun. So just a few thoughts. If you're new today, you won't know, but we're in a series on the book Celebration of Discipline. It's a Christian classic. And so far we've been looking at, well, I kicked off with a meditation and study, not medication, meditation, that's the one, and study. And then we looked at prayer and fasting as we're in the season of Lent. How do we say no or turn down the volume on our bodily desires? They're God-given drives, but getting them under control in a godly way, prayer and fasting. And then Mark last week was talking about simplicity and solitude. So not just being alone, but choosing sometimes to be alone with Christ, choosing to make that an intentional time. But truthfully, today is probably the single most misunderstood and countercultural of this series. I'm thinking, why did I put myself on the rota today? But we're on the theme of submission, Christian submission. I wonder what the word submission means to you. Have a think. What a jolly word. I'm grown up enough, old enough, to remember Saturday afternoon television. And that was when wrestling was on. And I was familiar with that sort of moment when people were sort of careering into each other, and then eventually someone would tap the floor, which means I submit. So in my last church, there was actually a member of the church who was a cage fighter. And he seemed a lovely guy. I just couldn't quite compute this extreme brutality. And I'm not saying that should be one of your Lenten disciplines to take it up at all. In fact, that's not what we're thinking about today. You'll be really happy to know. It's recognizing a deep truth. Meekness, which would be another word for submission, is not weakness. It's strength under control. So submission, in the sense I'm going to be thinking about it, is always, it has to be a free choice, or it's not true submission. If it's forced, that's just abuse or bullying. But Christian submission means we had a choice and we chose to do what someone else wanted, or indeed what God wanted. Because that's the same invitation God gives us. He says, well, I'm the creator and maker of all things. You could go my way or your own. You choose. And I love in the Old Testament where it says, now I set before you this day life and death. You choose. And then, like, this was a really hard question. It says, choose life. And that's the option God gives us, but it is a genuine choice that all human beings have, but not only in relation to God, but to one another all the time. And in Mark 10, James and John, frankly, don't come out very well out of the... And there's so many gospel stories like this where the disciples are not heroes. But I'm so glad they asked Jesus this question, not so they'd look stupid or bad, but because it gives us such a beautiful window into Jesus' own self-understanding of his identity and his calling and ministry. Because James and John were like us. You know, you have to fight for what you get. You hold on to what you have. And they were hungry for power. They'd chosen to follow Jesus, which was not without cost and personal sacrifice. Said, actually, when this all pans out, we'd love to ask you to do us a favor. So they want some power, and they say to their humble teacher, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. And it feels like they've sort of lapsed into a fairy story and think he's the fairy godmother about to give them, we're not going to say what it is, just promise to give us whatever we want. But Jesus, as ever, is so gracious. What do you want me to do for you? He asked. And actually, that's a great question. Because whenever we offer prayer ministry, that's what we would encourage those who pray to ask. What do you want Jesus to do for you? It's not about exerting any power or control. It's an invitation. And of course, we don't have any power or control over God. We will pray with you and for you. But that first question they ask, the request is, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in glory. They want glory. And how very different their prayer, which is a request to Jesus, they pray to Jesus. Jesus' own prayer was, your will be done, not mine. Whereas they're saying to Jesus, our will be done, not yours. But Jesus just says kindly, I think, to them, you have no idea what you're asking. They think, of course we do. One to be on the right, one to be on the left, in the moment of your greatest glory. But we know the story. The moment of Jesus' greatest glory is the strange and curious glory of the cross. And before going to the cross, in John 12:23, Jesus says, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, if it submits to that journey, it produces many seeds. The one who loves his life will lose it, while the one who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. So it's a strange kind of glory that only Jesus has foreseen, the glory of a dying seed. And so Jesus insists to James and John, you don't know what you're asking. Those places belong to those for whom they've been prepared. And they have indeed two nameless thieves who will be either side of him, in the right and the left, in his glory. And only one of them will notice any glory about him at that moment. But Jesus turns this into a beautiful teaching for them and a beautiful truth for us. You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. He's saying there's plenty of bullies in the world. We don't need more of that, thank you. And that's how the world is generally run. And then he just simply says, not so with you. You have got to do it differently if you're going to be my followers. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The first talk I gave was on chewing the cud, repeatedly going over a verse and just exploring it. This would be, if you've not tried that yet, I commend this verse to you. Mark 10:45. Jesus says, this is who I am, this is what I've come to do. It will repay you with blessing if you will just turn it over and discover, what is this? For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus chose voluntarily to submit to the Father's will, even when it was very hard. I guess that's when we find out whether we have got a submitted attitude. If we're agreeing with the same direction, it's not really submission, it's just convenience. It's when it's hard we find if it's submission. And if we name ourselves his followers, we must walk in his footsteps as his disciples. And this literally means, at times, doing what we do not want to do, to lay down what we want to do and choose what we don't want to do, to submit and to serve. And most of us find this really hard. How on earth are we going to learn to do that? Well, I think it begins by just simply trusting Jesus does know what he's talking about. This isn't just some theory. He preached it, but he also lived it. How do we learn to cope when we don't get our own way? I've got an older sister. That's a clue for me. How do we learn to submit? In healthy families, we get to realize we can't always get what we want. In healthy churches, we realize that we all have to compromise quite regularly. It's awful for some of us. I really want to do that. And yet we have to sublimate what we want because of the greater good. For some of you, that will trigger a film in you. I might put that down. If a child, just think, if a child is always given what they want, this will end up being so damaging for them. What a curse that would be if someone thinks the world revolves around them. Because that's not going to be good preparation to love other people, for building proper relationships where there's got to be give and take throughout life. So it's really not about losing our self-identity, let alone some kind of warped self-contempt. In fact, just the opposite. Jesus said, you must learn to love other people as much as you love yourself. So the precondition is we know, it's assumed, how to love ourselves, not despise ourselves. Say, this is a precious, beautiful life of God given to me. I value myself, but I'm not the only person in town. It doesn't all revolve around me. And so Jesus went on to say in Matthew 10:39, whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. I mean, I wish he hadn't said it, but it turns out he did. And then in Mark 9:35, anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all. And just as he was the night before he was betrayed, he chose to wash the feet of his disciples. No one would choose to do that. But Jesus says in John 13:15, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Now, there are times I like to think Jesus was exaggerating. When he said, chop off your hand and gouge out your eye, I like to think he's making a strong point as a preacher. But I don't think that's what he's doing here. I think he really means it, because he really did it. He modeled it and lived it. So as Christ followers, we are invited into a kind of discipleship where we choose, when we have a choice, we choose to lay down our lives, not in one heroic moment, but in daily, as Jesus said, whoever would be my disciple must take up their cross daily and follow me. That's what Luke records. How do we learn it? I tend to think it's in 1,000 little habits. When Mother Teresa had to queue, and there were different lines, she had a personal devotional choice she made of always choosing the longest line. And this is how I know I'm not like her. Because I'm one of those sad people, when I go to the supermarkets and I see a line of different checkouts, I always look for the shortest. And I'm so damaged in it, I'm even keeping track with where I would have been in another queue to see how well I'm doing. I find it very difficult. How many of you do that when you're in traffic? You keep track. Okay, there's a way to be free of this. Be a biker. I'm not saying thus says the Lord. I'm saying that's an option, though. But what she found was this little personal habit to try to die to self would equip her. She learned how she could serve others more selflessly. And we do have to learn it. The context in which we will probably learn the most is in our closest relationships. And the people, that's the place where most of us have the highest investment in a particular outcome. In our homes, I want this. You might have had this conversation this morning, some of you. The people we share our lives with most closely are the people who can push our buttons and trigger us the most, because that's where we have the most conflict, because we're not always getting our own way. Our family, our friends, our church family. And this is so radical that in Ephesians 5 and 6, Paul actually spells out what it looks like. And this is quite countercultural stuff. He says, wives, submit to your husbands. Husbands, be like Jesus. That's the deal. Why did I say I'd preach on this? Children, submit to your parents. Parents, don't be unreasonable. Slaves, submit to your masters. Masters, Jesus is watching you. Here's the deal, he says. But before any of that, even though that sounds, you know, a bit crazy, we do need to deal with a bit of complexity. These are general rules of submission. That's the Christian attitude, to choose to submit. But if a ruthless boss is making inappropriate demands that is destroying your family life, what do you do? Well, you need to have a bit of a think about it, because I think just always obeying your boss may not always. I mean, Paul says, obey the government. Is it okay to fiddle your taxes? Just what do you think? No. The scripture tells, I wish it didn't, but it tells us very clearly, pay your taxes, whether you feel like it or not. That's just part of the social construct and fabric of our society. We've got to do that. But there are a few cases where a government might be so bad or unreasonable that as a Christian, you could not follow it. It doesn't happen that often, I find. And so we could sort of invent reasons why we've got to disobey the government. We need to hold governments to account. And so there's complexity in these conversations. In a marriage where someone feels stifled or unfulfilled, they say, well, wives, just get on submitting, it'll pan out fine. No, probably there needs to be a conversation. There needs to be unpacking and growing so there's not just pain. And where there's parental anger that gets out of control and leads to harm, we don't just submit. We should intervene. That would be the godly thing to do. So there is nuance, but the general principle, before any of these things, Paul says something else very clearly. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. He's not saying because the person you're with, they're normally right. That would be hard. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying if you're a follower of Jesus, our general disposition is trying to be submissive and making space for other people. In your church, you submit, you honour one another beyond yourselves. And yet that is so countercultural. This is not talking about domestic violence, coercive controlling behaviour, which is rightly a criminal offence. Let's distinguish that. There is a real difference. And these sort of verses have been abused by people and abused sometimes in the church. The church of Jesus should be among the first at resisting abuse, including spiritual abuse. People who are in power, whether that's as a pastor or a bishop or anyone, a life group leader, we have different levels of power, just as teachers and parents, authorities is to set free, to bless. So what might this look like? Because we're submissive, had a quick think, doing mundane chores in the home that no one wants to do. I mean, that's what discipleship looks like, doing the boring stuff. I mean, there's some things we all love to do. Obviously, both Sue and I mean, we fight over doing the dishes. We just so love it. But there are some tasks none of us really want to do. But if we're submitted, we just choose to do it out of reverence for Christ. We will be a servant. Not because we love to do it, but we just know someone's got to do it. And that would be men and women and children. That's in the home is the primary place where children will learn to serve for the greater good, because it's not just about them, but where all of us in our closest relationships sometimes do stuff we don't enjoy because we want to bless someone else. We value this community higher than my own personal preferences. How about with our neighbours and in daily life? It might be offering a lift. I love the fact that, you know, every week some people are given a lift here to church. Some people drive across town. It's not because they want to use up more petrol. It's because they're servant-hearted, and that's a really easy but slightly irritating thing, because people say, I don't want to be a bother, and they want to make sure they are not a bother. We're part of the church family. Of course I'll give you a lift. Making a meal. I wonder how many times you've blessed someone with giving them a meal that they could not. Sorry, I had an uncle called Emil, so just confused me momentarily there. Have made a meal for someone else. Mowing a lawn. I will lose my reward in heaven over this, but I'll tell you, as a little thing, down my road, which is Park Lane, it's an unadopted road, so there's no sort of, the council will never go down there. But there's so much litter as people come out of the shops and chuck stuff away. And I was really irritated and thought, someone ought to do something. I thought, oh yes, well I live in the road. So I've got myself a litter picker. And so once a month I just go down with a bag and just pick up other people's rubbish. It's a very sort of Jesus thing to do. I try not to do too much witnessing, but I never mind if I'm noticed because I want to look great. And that's where the secrecy thing that Mark was talking about, solitude and secrecy, that can be actually part of, we don't want to do it as a badge, but doing humble acts of service. How about in this church, delivering Link magazines? It's a nice little walk, but most of us, particularly if it's inclement weather, you might not want to do it. But how else will the people of this parish, 3,500 homes, get to know about Jesus? Well, this is just one little way they might see, oh, there's a church. Perhaps I'll go along. Visiting someone stuck at home or caring for someone who's anxious, giving them a call. Not a hoax call, a nice call, just to clarify there. Just this week, there was someone unexpectedly from our church family taken to hospital, and I sent out an email to three or four of her closest friends, and within an hour, someone said, I'm going into hospital tomorrow, I'll go and see her. Now, it wasn't because that person didn't have anything else to do in her diary. It was just a simple response. That's, I think, what submission looks like. Making ourselves available with simple, 1,000 simple acts of kindness. Dear friends, Jesus calls us to die to ourselves. It's an invitation. Normally you say following Jesus is going to be really fun. Today, that's not the message. You're invited to come and die to yourself. And oddly, Jesus says, but it will be fun, just it's not quite the fun the world will say is the fun you're needing, to die that we may truly live. Appropriate submission is the path, or one of the paths, of wisdom and humility that enlarges our capacity to love other people. So discipline is not the goal. That just is the path to being a Pharisee, of notching up how holy we are. That's not what we're about. But choosing to have a submissive heart to serve others like Jesus has served us is a way of being free on the inside. Learning that freedom includes not always having our own way. Just as I was coming forward, I had a really clear picture in my mind of someone just going into a hospital and they need an operation. And you know you're invited to sign a form, sort of donating all your body parts, I think. I've never read to the end. I thought, I think I better just sign this. Otherwise, if you read everything of what could go wrong, you just depress yourself, frankly. But if you don't submit, they won't do the operation. You've got to choose to opt in. But you know that will be the only path to healing. And I believe there are people here today. And Jesus says, well, are you up for it or not? I mean, we talk and sing so much about trust. Do we really trust God? Or do you think he's trying to ruin your life? Of course you don't think that. But in the nitty-gritty of life, we want to hang on to control. Christ, give us grace to deny ourselves, take up our cross, and follow you.
Otherwise, you would have all been singing a cappella. Let's just respond with a song, Blessed Be Your Name.
name of the Lord. Blessed be.